for it now.
Welcome to Settle Into the Rig, Episode 2. I'm your host, Dan Hummer, here on the Everything Unscripted Network, available on all podcast platforms. We got a hell of a show tonight, some good topics. Our three contestants, first off, my brother, Doug.
Yo.
Good friend of the show, Eric.
What's up?
And another good, real good friend of the show, Boxman.
What's going on, guys?
Not too bad. How's everyone doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Good.
Better.
I mean, I'm nervous.
Yeah.
I never won an argument against Boxman.
I don't think I have either, so that's
Oh, we got three very capable competitors. Doug is our returning champion from last week.
That's going to last another, what, hour?
Yeah. Before we get started here, Doug, we'll throw you some plugs. Make sure to plug Boxman, too.
Of course I'm going to plug Boxman right here.
Yeah.
All right. Here you listen to Boxman and Smirk, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday and Friday night, Mixler.com/Dirt Sheet Dudes. They can be found on all major podcast platforms. Usually, what, Box, around 10:15, 10:20-ish Eastern time?
Yeah, right after AEW on Wednesdays and right after SmackDown on Fridays. Yeah.
Make sure you give them a follow, a listen, you know, like, subscribe, all that fun stuff. And listen to us Friday nights, 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. This upcoming Friday night, we're going to be talking No Way Out 2004. The Eddie Guerrero Brock Lesnar match.
Yep.
Also listen to obviously Settle It in the Ring. Do we have a set time for that?
No, because we're not sure if it's really going to be weekly yet. Might be bi-weekly, so
okay.
Saturdays at 8-9.
So Saturdays at 8-9, it's either going to be weekly or bi-weekly. We'll let everybody know. Control Chaos will be back probably next Sunday,
yes.
5 p.m. Eastern time. You can usually catch it Sundays at 5 p.m. Eastern time. Of course, we haven't been on because football's been on and we've been distracted. And also listen to Eric Clinton and I this Tuesday night, 6 p.m. Eastern time.
The season finale.
Huh?
No, I was saying it's a season finale.
Yeah, I was getting to that. Don't interrupt me doing the plug. Mark interrupts Boxman doing the plugs on their show. Mark just sits
Sorry.
There and drinks. So listen to Eric Clinton and I this Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern time, on the season finale of NFL Hard Hits. As we will be reviewing the Super Bowl. Also catch us patreon.com/capital U podcast. You can find Doug's history lesson on there. You know, where I get my my Rain Man on.
Yeah.
I miss him doing that. The next episode is actually going to be about the natural Butch Reed, who passed away just yesterday. So
Correct.
That'll be a history lesson.
Nice.
And of course, we got some other things. Follow us on the group, facebook.com/group/oldschoolwrestling. That's where you can get all the information about the podcast. Right.
All right, gentlemen. let's get right into it. I'll explain the rules real quick. There isn't much to go on, but we do have a couple. I can see Doug's already in the competitive spirit.
Yeah.
So we're going to have four rounds here. I'm going to give it to everybody first to do a short little pitch to, you know, why their answer is right for each question. And then after everyone kind of gives their little pitch, I'm going to ring the metaphorical bell, you know, ding, ding.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have a little fun. We're going to argue a little bit, you know, get a little conversation out of it. And then at the end, I will be the judge, and I will give the point. I will award the point whoever I think had the best argument. And then at the end of four rounds, whoever has the most points wins. And if we have a tie, we'll do a sudden death.
Now, awesome. Hopefully questions have to do with Baron Corbin, because that's where Box and I get the most verbally abusive towards each other.
There's no Corbin team.
I mean, the guy sucks. What do you want to say? Anyway,
yeah, I don't want to talk about that asshole.
Hey, I finally saw the light after 3 years.
Thank God.
Nah, you know, it's all right.
But so we'll get started here. The first question we have is the best odd couple tag team in wrestling of all time. I'm going to give it to you here first, Doug. Who's the best odd couple tag team of all time?
Oh, fuck. Starting with all this pressure. I'm actually going to say, I gave you a different answer earlier, but I'm changing it.
Okay.
I'm actually going to say Kane and X-Pac. And the reason why is because at that time, the Kane character was so, you know, mysterious, so dark, and, you know, so demented. And he was basically, the announcers touted him as not being human. And here comes X-Pac, who is a human, or he was back then. I think he's done inhumane things since then. But, and he kind of humanized Kane. So, and they were very successful. Now, yeah, they weren't together very long, but they were together for what, 6-7 months, and it was entertaining watching the two of them together, because they actually gelled well as a team. So, yeah, I mean, and I enjoyed watching them. I mean, X-Pac was always a favorite of mine. Kane, you know, was a favorite of mine too. I mean, as you could tell by last week, I picked him as the greatest Royal Rumble competitor of all time, and then Clint ass raped me. Still walking funny.
Ouch.
But yeah, no, Kane and X-Pac is my choice there.
All right, Box, who do you got? Best odd couple tag team.
All right. I picked the Rock and Sock Connection. You know, back in those years, it was the 99, 2000, you know, 99, they were going up against WCW. And, you know, the shows were great back then, you know, Raw and shit like that. Plus, you had two guys at the height of their career. They just threw them together. And, to me, they were the ultimate odd couple, these guys. And, I mean, Jesus Christ, what did they have? Three-time championships, the tag team championships? So, I don't know. To me, when you talk, you know, wrestling in 1999 and, like, you know, 99, 2000, odd couples, I think of them, Rock and Sock Connection. I had an honorable mention, which I'll bring up after this. But to me, these guys were just what – I mean, when I think of an odd couple, Rock and Sock Connection is what I think of. So.
Absolutely. All right, Eric, what do you got?
I got Team Hell No. Daniel Bryan Kane. The reason I picked this one is because it's similar to X-Pac and Kane, kind of. Daniel Bryan and Kane were feuding at the time, I believe. And then it was the catchphrase of the Yes Movement. And they had issues, and then they were seeing the doctor, and then it went from there, and then it became a tag team, and Team Hell No crowd started chanting him and Mo, and then you just started from there.
All right. I mean, very good opening statements by all. Dig, dig. Doug, why is yours better than the other two?
Okay. So, this is going to be kind of, well, it's going to be kind of hard here to pitch, I think, because Rock and Sock is a great choice. And I, too, was a fan of Rock and Sock Connection. But Kane and X-Pac, again, like, Kane at least grew to like X-Pac. Rock eventually would like Mick Foley, but Mick would already be retired by then.
All right.
Like, at least Kane and X-Pac at some point, you know, were able to get along. I mean, then X-Pac nuts shot at him and turned on him, but yeah. Still, I mean, that's not the point here. And Team Hell No, I mean, it was basically Daniel Bryan is a clean and sober X-Pac. Okay? So, I mean, basically they were redoing this whole thing, except for this time they were having the two of them hug and kiss and fondle. So, I mean, at this point they were trying to, I mean, not make Kane look like a big softie. They were trying to make Kane, you know, look like Nathan Lane, for Christ's sake. So, but Kane and X-Pac, I mean, that was like, it was kind of like a feel-good, you know, type thing. It's like, okay, you know, Kane, Kane's never trusted, and he's only trusted two people in his life, his father and his brother. They both tried to kill him. Well, one tried to kill him, the other one tried to put him in a mental hospital. All right, so now it's hard for him to trust somebody, and finally, X-Pac gains his trust. And it was just, it was a feel-good story for several months. So, and yeah, the other two, it's just like, I mean, the other two, like, the Rock and Mankind thing, like, Rock may have started to like Mick Foley at the very end, but, like I said, I think Mick was already retired by the time he did start to like him. And the whole Daniel Bryan Kane thing, it was basically WWE's attempt to make Kane and Daniel Bryan look like Mitch and Cam from Modern Family.
All right. Your rebuttal.
Me?
Boss. Or whoever, but.
Oh, man.
Whoever. Eric, if you want to go, you can go. I'm fine. Whatever you want to do, man. Let me know.
Oh, okay. To Doug's point, yeah, it seemed like Daniel Bryan and Kane was like a 2011 version of X-Pac in, what, 10 years later? Was that 10 years later? Yeah.
It was about 12 years later, or 13 years later, because this was actually in 2012.
13 years later. But the difference is, I think Team Hell No was more over with the crowd. They even made T-shirts of it. And then they even had a little reunion a couple, like 5 years later, and then a little small one at the Royal Rumble last week. And that still got over. So it's still kind of I think people remember Team Hell No more than X-Pac and Kane, unless you watch the Attitude Era. Rebuttal.
Yep.
All right, my turn now.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. I don't know. Main thing for me is, you know, Rock and Sock Connection. You know, they were mainly, I know they made a quick comeback in 04, but 99, 2000, you got to think of that roster back then. That was one of the most stacked rosters. We were coming to the tail end of the Attitude Era, but we were still coming in the Attitude Era, and that roster was just the most memorable roster that people remember. So, you know, just for that, they had so many, you know, there were a ton of feuds those guys were in. And, you know, that team lasted about a year. But, I mean, we had a lot of, you know, I mean, Jesus Christ, we had the Mean Street Posse back then, goddammit. And there were plenty of people back then. And I don't know. I mean, the other two were just, you know, from the newer era, which is a little, you know, not as good as the Attitude Era. So for that, I believe that Rock and Sock Connection, most memorable out of the three that we have picked here.
Okay, first of all, I don't know how far into that beer you got, but X-Pac and Kane were formed before Rock and Sock.
Were they?
Yeah, they were formed in April of 99.
You know I'm horrible at times. My God, you know I'm bad at that shit.
Yeah, I remember.
All right, so it was the same time.
When I was with you guys on the show, you would usually look to me to fill in the dates.
Oh, you got one guy in a red suit and one guy that sticks his tongue out all the time. Stop it. I have talent on mine.
All right, anyone got anything else they want to jump in with? Or? This was a good round. All right, dig, dig.
Yeah.
That was definitely an interesting way to start us off.
I told you it was gonna get dangerous between him and I.
Doug, I'm gonna have to cancel you out right away just because I think you had kind of an uphill battle. Just because the other two teams are so fondly remembered and so popular that I mean, like, big wrestling fans like us and hardcore fans are gonna look back at Kane and X-Pac and be like, oh, that was cool, but I mean,
I should have gone with Hurricane and Rosie. I know it. I knew it.
Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, I think it was. I think you made good points, and I think you did a good job dismantling Team Hell No pretty well. But Boxman just brought up too many good points, especially in the era and the time, and throwing the two biggest guys together like that, and it really did work. And to me, WWE has been trying to kind of capture that ever since with a couple tag teams. They've been trying to make the next Rock and Sock. Maybe not made an X-Pac. So
right.
I'm going
to
give...
That's understandable. I mean, of course you're being nice to him because he's a guest.
No, I just think he won. I'm giving the point to Box. So there you go.
I would give the point to Box.
And my honorable mention, by the way, was Goldust and Booker T.
Which is another phenomenal choice.
Yeah. I figured those. So if someone mentioned Rock and Sock, that was my go-to if someone had already mentioned it. So,
I mean,
hell, I would have gave it to Bach if I wasn't participating.
You can't say that, Eric. You cannot just say, oh, yeah. You have to go down swinging, not sucking.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Hey.
Oh, shit. Anyway, this is fun. I like this. This is good.
it's just round one, Box. We got a long way to go.
I'm just getting warmed up.
Well, that's
right. Me too. I'm on my first beer.
All right. Question number two, round two. Worst gimmick match of all time. I'm actually going to start with Box on this one.
Okay. I chose the Good Housekeeping match between China and Jeff Jarrett. I remember back when they did this match. I think Jeff Jarrett was about to leave at this time. I think it was Jeff Jarrett leaving, or was it China? I forget. But I remember watching this match and going, I can't believe they're actually doing this. This is the most sexist match I've ever seen in my life. And it was like they didn't even care. And it wasn't even a good match. So because of just everything about the match was bad. The match itself, the idea of it, and everything, blech, awful. So there you go. I'm good now.
Dougie?
Okay, I'm actually going to go with, and I'm changing my answer that I gave you earlier again.
Jesus Christ.
Again?
Yeah, well, because I've had time to think about it, because I've been sweating this for the last 6 hours. I'm going to go the Human Torch match between Vampiro and Sting from the Great American Bash 2000. Obviously, this was a Vince Russo idea, because it sucked. You know, just like probably the Good Housekeeping, the Good Housekeeping match may not have been his idea, because I think he was already in WCW ruining that show.
Yeah,
before.
That was late 99.
I think so.
So, but the object of the match, and I know they kind of did it with Randy Orton and The Fiend in the Firefly Inferno match. But, like, the idea of you have to win by setting your opponent on fire. I mean, really, so the idea is to commit arson and try to kill a guy. Like, I get it, you know, that, you know, Vampiro was very dark and demented. Sting was kind of going into those dark places and all that. But why fucking do this? I mean, if you had to write Sting off TV, which I don't even know why. I think he was only gone for like 3 weeks. I mean, like, have him, have Bischoff drive another Hummer into him or something. Or not another Hummer. I mean, I think Sting was the only one that didn't get hit by a Hummer, you know, around that time. And when I say Hummer, I don't mean you or I.
Thanks for clear.
No problem. But, like, it's just, it's so stupid because you're making it seem, because, you know, kids were still watching this around this time. And they're seeing this on the TV, and it's just like, okay, so this is what wrestling is. Okay. Well, when we wrestle in the backyard on tomorrow, this is what we're going to fucking do. It's just, it was so stupid. And it was a waste of Vampiro's talent. And Sting had been in every shitty match possible. So, you know, I'm sure he was just like, yeah, fuck, they're going to pay me anyway.
All right, Eric, what do you got? Worst game
of- I got Halloween Havoc, the Chamber of Horrors with between. It was one side, you got Sting, the Steiner Brothers, and who was the other guy? The other guy was. Thank you. And then you got Mankind, the Butcher, Abdul the Butcher, Razor Ramon, and who was the other guy?
Vader.
It was an 8-man, huh? Vader, thank you. It was an 8-man tag. Gauntlet, no, not gauntlet style. No tag, no. It was an 8-man tag, basically. It was a clusterfuck. The object, the way to win it was to electrocute your opponent, which happened, but the own Mankind did it to his own teammate. And that was it. It was a clusterfuck of a match. There was no point to it. I don't know why they had it. It was stupid.
All right.
Why would you want to electrocute somebody?
What's up?
Everything go wrong.
Very good point. Very good point. All right. Ding, ding. Box, why is your match worse than the other two?
Wow. I hate to say, but those are all really shitty matches. really bad matches. I just think the one that this little match here, once again, you had this whole sexist match, you're sitting there watching Jeff Jarrett basically do a hardcore match against China. And I mean, I don't know if y'all remember, but I mean, this was a hard to watch match. And I don't know. For me, this was one of the worst gimmicks ever and gimmick matches of fucking, like, of all time to me. I hated it. I'll always remember it. I just remember being uncomfortable watching it. And I mean, the other two I just kind of laughed at, but this one actually made me uncomfortable to watch. Even in 1999, this was before the whole, you know, everything that's going on now, of course. But man, even back then, it was just a rough match to watch. So,
all right, Doug, you had to argue for sexism. Good luck. I was about to say he had a hell of a good luck.
Sexism is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I do agree that the match was, because I've actually only seen the match once. Okay, so I can't really comment on too much except for I watched it once and once is enough. But like the whole Human Torch thing, and again, I'm not saying, you know, well, it's kind of hard to compare arson and sexism and say one's worse than the other, even though technically you could go to jail for one. Actually, technically, you could go to jail for both.
Yeah, that's what I
thought. You can go to jail for all three.
Well, first of all, they didn't electrocute anybody. They didn't put the fucking thing on his head. And second of all, yeah, it was a bad match, but it was bad because it was a match. The lever was down. Cactus pulled it up. If you are going to turn that machine on, you need to take it down. Okay? So it was bad because the whole thing was fucked from the beginning because they gimmicked the cage wrong. They set the thing up wrong. Nobody could fit the little thing over Abdullah's fat head. So it was just like, you just look at that as a kid and you're just like, if you're like mom or dad, or you're watching it with your mom or dad, and you're like, Dad, is he really dead? And, you know, your father or whatever would look at you and be like, no, he's not. He's fine. And he's not just saying that just to calm you down. He's saying that because he has a pair of eyes, and I'm sure he's seen prison movies to where when you see a guy get electrocuted or executed through the electric chair, you can see that the goddamn thing needs to be over the guy's head. And the lever needs to be down, not up. So the reason why the Human Torch match was worse is because, one, they actually, like, there were actually flames. I mean, yes, Sting was wearing the protective gear or whatever, the protective clothing. But they did actually set the motherfucker on fire and then threw him, 25, 30 feet?
Yeah.
Okay? And so, like, you're saying, so basically a guy getting fake electrocuted, which I've seen better looking electrocutions in movies where, because they actually have professional stuntmen. The whole good housekeeping thing was Jeff Jarrett's character at the time, was he was supposed to be sexist. He had been hitting women over the head with guitars and would continue to do so for the next 10 years. Okay? The Human Torch match was just, it was just wrong because it makes you think, okay, it's cool to set somebody on fire.
Eric, you got a rebuttal to those two statements?
Yeah, I mean, both guys make great points. But you...
Tear us down!
Huh?
I said, don't butter us down, tear us down!
Okay. The Chamber of Horror match was a clusterfuck from the beginning. I mean, whoever thought about that idea is a dumbass. Why would you want to have an electric chair and try to electrocute? I know they weren't going to electrocute somebody on for real, but just the idea of it, it wouldn't even work in 20. None of the matches today, all three of us named, would work in 2021. They were all horrible. We can all agree with that, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
So,
you think Jim Herd and Vince Russo are related?
Now, to my rebuttal is, it was a clusterfuck from the beginning, and it shouldn't have even happened. It's just bad. The whole thing was bad. You shouldn't even have 8 men in the match. That was a clusterfuck there.
All right.
Well, can I give a little?
Keep going.
Can I give a little tidbit though about the Chamber of Horrors match?
Go ahead.
Barry Windham was actually supposed to be in this match, on the heel side, even though he was a babyface. By the way, the guy that came up with the idea of this match was Dusty Rhodes.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh. Sorry.
Barry Windham.
Rest in peace.
At the beginning of the. at the beginning of the day, like Barry Windham was suffering from a hand injury anyway.
Yeah.
Barry Windham actually said, like, I don't know if it was the day of or the day before, he's like, can you write me out of this, please? Like, I don't want to be here. So they actually brought Vader actually replaced him in the match.
Yeah.
It was Vader. Replaced him in the match because Barry Windham's just like, this is going to be so stupid. I actually have talent and I don't want that to be wasted. So just do something to me.
Yeah. It was a wasted match.
Yeah.
Barry's back there slamming his hand in the car door.
All right, guys. That will do it for round two. Another really good. Really good conversation there. I think you all made awesome points. The good housekeeping match, I'm probably going to get shit for this, but I'd probably have to cancel out Box first because I feel like a lot of people still actually got some entertainment out of it. I think it's known as an awful match, but I think it's known as that Attitude Era so bad it's good type stuff. At least that's how I look at it.
Those people are probably security guards that are beating their wives right now. But anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry. What?
Exactly. Maybe. But so I do think a lot of people – I don't think people – and people don't shit on that as much as the other two. I mean, Chamber of Horrors still gets shit on to this day. Deservedly. The Human Torch match, it's kind of hard with that, Doug, because we've seen that and we've seen an idea from Russo, which is similar to that work in the Inferno match.
Right.
And get extremely over. Yeah. As in the Inferno match. Obviously, this was the shits, but
yeah. This
is just that done wrong.
But I also do think that, like, with the Chamber of Horrors match, people still do shit on it, but they shit on it with a smile on their face.
Yeah, I mean, it's another one that's it's so bad it's good, and people think it's funny from the, you know, the lever thing with Cactus and stuff that you brought up. But I am going to have to give the point to Eric, because I think out of all things, I mean, we've seen your match work in a different company, in a different setting. I think a lot of people were entertained regardless by the Good Housekeeping match, even though, and I mean, a lot of that Attitude Era stuff is not really morally right. And if you look back at it today, I mean, if you try to write something like that today, you're going to prison.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'm going to have to give the point to Eric. But good.
Thank you.
So we're at 1-1, Boxman and Eric. Doug has 0 right now, going into round 3. And I'm actually going to start with Eric for this one because it's one of his favorite superstars. Yes. The best CM Punk feud of all time. What you got, bud?
I got John Cena because everybody remembers CM Punk more in WWE than the Independence. And this feud changed CM Punk's career in WWE. He went from mid-card to probably one of the best superstars for the next 2 to 3 years before he left. And he worked with probably the top guy in the company, John Cena. The fact that John Cena dropped the belt to CM Punk showed that the company trusted CM Punk with the belt, and he held it for over a year. So I think this was his best. This was his best work. I mean, everybody remembers the promo, the mic drop. I don't know what they call it, but the mic drop in 2011. He was going to leave the company. He was going to leave the company. Not really, but...
All right. All righty. Boxman, what do you got?
Best CM Punk feud. I picked the Jeff Hardy feud. I thought that was one of the best feuds. We had a pretty good mix there of kayfabe and reality. CM Punk going after Jeff Hardy for the Demons. That was publicly known at that point. And we had CM Punk being the perfect antagonist for that, being the straight edge messiah at the time. So I don't know. To me, this was one of a really memorable feud of CM Punk's. You had cash-ins, you had the injuries, you had excellent, scathing promos by CM Punk on Jeff Hardy about drug use and all kinds of things. And I just thought this was the best CM Punk feud.
All right, Dougie.
Okay. Oh God, I'm really by the balls here. I picked Rey Mysterio. And, you know, like Box was saying with Punk being the straight edge messiah, he was so deep into that straight edge society, you know, the messiah deal here with Mysterio. Especially when Mysterio came out, was celebrating his daughter Aaliyah's birthday. I think she was 9 at the time. And, you know, Punk comes out and basically humiliates Rey in front of his daughter and makes Aaliyah cry. You know, she's only 9 years old at the time. Right? And it's very traumatizing. I mean, obviously, you know, she would grow up and start dating Murphy. Which apparently also traumatized her because they haven't been on TV in a month. But, like, the whole thing is that, like, with Punk, and the reason why I picked this as the best CM Punk feud is because it got, you know, like the whole Jeff Hardy thing, that got personal talking about Jeff Hardy's demons. Well, what's more personal than somebody's demons? Their family. Okay? And CM Punk went the extra mile to humiliate Rey and his daughter, his family. And the WrestleMania match was good. I mean, should have been longer. Should have been longer. Even though I know Box personally enjoyed the Bret Hart Vince McMahon match because he idolizes Bret Hart. I know those are fighting words. There goes the beer. But like, and then like they had the match at Extreme Rules where if Punk lost, he was gonna, you know, get a haircut. And then of course they had the debut of the new Straight Edge Society member. But that over the edge match that they had, the hair versus, it was either hair versus mask or it was hair versus you know, Punk or Rey joining the Straight Edge Society. That match was awesome. And that was the proper blow off to this feud. And like, it just, Punk still came out of it, you know, looking strong. Cause after he got his head shaved, you know, he had the mask on. He basically looked like Delirious, his twin brother, Delirious, you know, from Ring of Honor, with the way he had that, with the type of mask he had on. But like, just Punk really, like, he started coming into his own as a heel with the Jeff Hardy feud. This feud with Mysterio put him over the top as one of the most despicable bastards, you know, in the WWE at that time.
All right.
Ding, ding. You're fighting for your spot in this thing, Doug. Why aren't the other two as good as yours?
Okay. So the Cena feud, I mean, yes, it really helps solidify Punk as a main eventer and all that, and I get that. But unfortunately, the office still didn't believe in him. I mean, yes, like the fans believed in him and all that, but they did everything. The WWE did everything they could to fuck that up, okay? And the Jeff Hardy feud, I wasn't necessarily a fan of it because I am a Jeff Hardy fan. And I didn't like, you know, what was happening to Jeff, you know, them bringing up Jeff Stevens like that because I felt like it was just too personal. As, you know, was the Rey Mysterio thing. But, like, the Rey Mysterio thing, it just made me want to watch Punk more because it made me want to see somebody finally actually try to kill this motherfucker. Or not kill him, but, like, beat the shit out of him. Because every time Rey Mysterio's family is involved in an angle, Rey, that brings out the best in Rey. So and I thought Ray and Punk really did bring the best out in each other. I mean, Cena, the whole Cena thing, like, Cena was going to be on top no matter what. So, like, this feud really didn't do, the feud didn't do anything for Cena. I mean, it did something for Punk for a little bit, and then The Office is just like, wait a minute, we hate this guy. Why are we listening to the people? And the Jeff Hardy thing was they were just looking for a guy to write Jeff off of television because he didn't want to re-sign with the company because he knew he was going to get arrested at some point. So the reason why the Punk Mysterio feud is better is because the matches, I don't think they ever had a bad match. Because you had two guys that were equal in ring talent.
Oxman?
All right. I mean, yeah, they're both good picks. The Cena one, but I mean, you know, Cena is Cena. I mean, Cena wins. We all know that. In the end, Cena always wins. We know that. So, you know, it's just the way it goes. Mysterio, that's actually not a bad one. But Doug actually made one good point in his argument for his, but he actually made it for mine, that this was actually the feud that this Jeff Hardy feud was the one that actually really solidified CM Punk as the heel. He was a babyface coming in in the buildup of this match. And then after he cashed in on Jeff is when really you know, people started saying, oh, he stole it. You know, CM Punk stole the championship, this and that. And that's where they started working him more as the heel. And, you know, I just think that this feud, again, I like when they kind of mix the kayfabe with reality. I think that actually is and I get the whole family thing, but this was something we were all hearing about during the time Jeff's demons, I think the raid on Jeff's house was right before this all happened. If I remember correctly, I'm sure Doug will correct me.
The raid on the house actually happened after he left. So after they wrote Punk beat him in the cage match.
Okay. But his use
knew
of
the raid was coming. I think that's why he didn't want to resign.
Yeah. And he had also, and he had been in some trouble before then that we had all heard about on the old dirt sheets. But there was that. And again, the promos for this were just scathing promos on Jeff Hardy's drug abuse. You know, him talking about, you know, if you remember at one point, his eye got legit injured. And CM Punk was like, you know, look, this says take three times a day. That's what I do. Unlike you, Jeff, when you're taking your, you know, Vicodin, that may be prescribed, but it says take one. You're taking four, maybe five. I mean, just ridiculous promos digging into his drug use. And again, this was right in the beginning where CM Punk was really coming into that straight edge character. So it was just the promos, the buildup, the cash in, the way Punk sold the injury, the way, you know, everything with Jeff Hardy, just, you know, even Jeff Hardy had some decent promos and the matches. Jeff Hardy, CM Punk, come on. So I don't know. To me, the promos, the reality of it going on at the time just made for great stuff. And if you remember, this whole thing actually after, you know, this lingered to after Jeff left, where Jeff even did a drunken, you know, Waffle House promo on CM Punk afterwards. So I know it doesn't have a cue, but just want to throw that in there, that this did linger. Anyway, that's good for me.
You know, he's already going to win this thing. You really have to hammer it home.
Well, you know, I just thought I'd mention that. Just, you know, throw it out there. Waffle House promos,
I mean,
are always
good. You don't realize that if you win this thing, that means you have to come back.
Okay.
Got to defend the title. Okay. Well, he hasn't won it yet. Eric, let's give Eric a fighting shot. Eric.
He gets on the show too many times, he's going to ruin his street cred.
I don't have any street cred.
Eric.
I'm actually glad I went last so I can listen to these two. My argument is that, as I said before, this elevated CM Punk's career in the WWE. Even if they didn't trust him but he still held the title for over a year. He feuded with Chris Jericho, Daniel Bryan, yeah, all those two. And then the pipe bomb, that started the feud. And then he threatened to leave the company if he didn't beat John Cena in his hometown in Chicago. And then you had Vince McMahon involved in the feud. So you have the owner involved in the feud. I disagree with Doug when he said they didn't trust him. When you have the owner in the feud, owner of the company in the feud, that's like what he was with Stone Cold in the attitude there. So I think CM Punk John Cena was a great feud. But hey. I think it was the best feud.
I'm pretty sure that, like, for, like, the last 10 to 12 years, Vince McMahon had no idea what the hell he was doing. I'm pretty sure he started being senile in, like, 08, 09. So he probably had no idea he was even on TV until after he would watch the video back and go, oh, yeah, I was part of this, pal? So, yeah, I mean, it's been talked about how much the office had no faith in him.
You got anything else?
Yeah, I can see why you say that. He didn't main event a lot of especially WrestleMania, but as I said, it elevated his career in WWE.
To begin with, that whole title reign, he wasn't the main event once.
Yeah. But I still think it's the best feud because it made a name for himself. He was a bigger name than he was before. Went from mid-card to main event.
Anything else, Doug, or we call it?
I mean, I'm already screwed anyway, but I just want to say this thing about the Punk Mysterio feud to kind of hammer the point home, right? And, again, the Jeff Hardy thing, yes, it really put him as that, you know, main, you know, top heel. But, again, the Mysterio feud, if you didn't think he could go any lower than what he went with Jeff Hardy. He went there with Mysterio. Because here he is. He thinks he's Reverend Jim Jones, for Christ's sake. And he's getting people to shave their heads. And he's getting people to take this straight edge pledge or whatever the hell. It's just like he really established himself in the Mysterio feud as a cult leader. And then, like, my way is right. You know, you need to follow my way or else you are truly, you know, not a believer or whatever.
Ding, ding. Wow. This one's actually kind of tough. Eric, I really like what you were saying about the Cena feud, and I think all the matches there was great, but Doug is very correct, and he made very good points kind of dismantling it about how the office messed up. Everyone knows that Summer of Punk was botched, right? And with bringing Alberto Del Rio into the mix and all this, and Kevin Nash and Triple H and all that other shit, if you focused on Punk and Cena, you might have won this thing. But
Kevin Nash was not brought in to fix anything. Kevin Nash was brought in to fuck it up.
Yeah, well, round's over, come down. but yeah, so I think that kind of cancels out. And I think a lot of CM Punk fans will tell you that the best Punk is heel Punk. As much as over as he was, it's kind of hard to put him against these other two. So I'm going to have to knock that out right away. As far as the other two, and this is really difficult because you made really good points, Doug, and you really hammered it home at the end about the cult leader stuff.
Yeah.
And that saved your argument a lot. But the Box really hammered home about how he became a top heel. And it was really like the transition was overnight. Like it was the Hardy feud when you started to be like, okay, Punk's the man now. You know, he's one of the top guys. He's in the mix. And just the stuff. And when you say he got lower, it's kind of hard to really back that because it's hard to imagine him going lower than he went with Jeff Hardy. he went pretty low with both situations. And that was more based in real life. And Boxman made good points about breaking kayfabe. And that isn't, to me, that's not always best for business. But I think this is an example of it working really well. Doug, I'm sorry, you're our returning champion, but you're already knocked out. I got to give the point to Boxman.
It's okay.
Thank you.
I knew I should have had my wallet down here.
I forgot, you're my ride to work.
The thing that's saving you as me still being your ride to work is the fact that I work with you.
Okay. All right. That gas money just went up, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that makes it interesting here because
as long as I dismantled Eric's point about John Cena and CM Punk, like, that's a victory for me. That's all I care about.
And this last round, because you're...
Do I even need to be here?
You're going to be here because you're going to help me settle the verdict for the final round.
Ooh.
You're officially out of the competition, but you're going to help me settle the verdict. Eric, you're still in this bitch. Eric's still in this thing. It's 2-1, Boxman. If Eric wins here, then it will take us to a sudden death round. If Boxman wins this round, then he is the new settle it in the ring.
So I gotta help you decide here. So I have to pick between, Eric, who him and I have had several bitter breakups, and Boxman, who basically tonight sodomized me twice with a rusty fucking fishing knife.
Yeah, I need another beer.
I think I need one too.
You ready for this, Box?
I am.
I wanted this. This is what I wanted. I wanted you and me 1-on-1. I called you out last week, so.
Mano y mano, sir.
Yep. I remember I called him out, so this is perfect.
I told you. I accept, and I'm down for the challenge. Let's do this.
Yep.
Let's do this.
Let's go.
All right, Box, you got your refreshment?
Here. I'm good.
All right.
I should have went with Rosie in a hurricane.
All right, gentlemen.
I should have picked Punjabi prison as the worst gimmick, man. That probably would have helped.
You know what? That was too obvious, man. It was too obvious to pick that one. It really was, I thought.
That's why I went with the other one. A lot of good thinking.
I mean, you put Kane and Xbox against the Rock and Sock connection. What do you want me to do here, Doug?
I thought it would have been better than Rosie and the Hurricane.
All right. Rosie and the Hurricane was pretty funny. I like that, actually. I might have
that was
that one, Doug.
Yeah, I think you fucked up, Doug. Our final round.
That's a big
round four. This is the question I was most interested to hear everybody talk about. And I'm going to start with you, Boss, because you're in the lead here.
Okay.
What superstar and any company has the brightest future?
Yeah, and I picked Big E. I've said this a ton of times on my own show. I really, really think this guy, I mean, talk about checking every box. This guy's a former power lifter, you know, which immediately perks up Vince McMahon. He's a jack dude. He's not the biggest guy in the world. He's under 6 feet, which is a kind of a negative against him. But charisma-wise, amazing. I see they're starting to do something with him, and I'm hoping they keep doing something with him. But as far as a guy that I would put front and center if I owned a company and I was lucky enough to have this guy in it, this would be the man that I put front and center of my company as babyface or heel, either one. There's my little start off right there.
All righty. Eric, what do you got? Who's got the brightest future?
I'm going to say Darby Allin. Mm. I think he's young. He's working with one of the greatest wrestlers of all time right now. He's a TNT champion. I mean, he doesn't talk on the mic much, but I think he has that. He's over with the fans when there were fans. I mean, there is fans, but you know what I'm saying. I think I think he has that. He's good in the ring. I think he's talented. I think he has that it factor. I think he has good. I think he's going to be a future world champion.
Very good. All right, ding ding. Box, why does Big E have a brighter future than Darby Allin?
All right. And by the way, Eric, I like your pick. I do. I'm actually a big fan of Darby Allin. And now my problem, and I'm not my problem with Darby Allin, my worry about Darby Allin is he's a daredevil. He is up for doing anything. He takes unnecessary risks, in my opinion. I may be a fan of Darby Allin, but I worry about his safety. And a lot of times, I wish he would just rein it in. Hopefully they've been trying to tell him that, but then he goes to pay-per-views and does insane moves. I'm just afraid his shelf life is going to be very short. Big E, on the other hand, I think, once again, this is a guy, if I owned a company, I would want this guy front and center. I would be putting him on television. I would make his charisma. He can talk. He's good in the ring. He's a jack dude. Like I said, this guy, and not only does he check all those boxes, he's a homegrown, WWE talent, which I know we're talking any company here, but when you can put a guy out there for WWE that's, got that belt around his shoulder on the talk shows and the news shows and there, I just don't see Darby Allin being that kind of guy that you could put out there like that. Even with Sting, I don't see him being that guy. I would have Big E plastered on every television show that I could find, every radio show. He's got charisma, natural charisma, a great talker, just a funny guy at heart. And it comes off when he's out there and good in the ring. And once again, he's that homegrown talent that WWE loves, and that's the kind of guy I would put a rocket behind.
Okay, very good point. Eric, your rebuttal.
My rebuttal is, I think working with Sting, I think it's going to help him a lot, because I think Sting's going to tell him to slow it down a little bit and be a wrestler, be more of a wrestler. And Sting with the face of WCW for, 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
At least. So I think, I don't think they would have brought in Sting and put him with Darby Allin. They didn't believe in Darby Allin to be the future. That's the way I see it. They brought in Sting and they automatically paired him up with Darby Allin, who they gave the TNT championship to after he beat Cody, who's right now is the face of the company. So Cody put him over and he's working with Sting. So I think that's a sign that the AEW has a lot of trust in him, and they're going to put it behind him, and he's going to be, as I said, a future world champion and the babyface of the company.
Very good. Anybody got anything else? Or?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay.
I think I'm good, too.
Yeah.
All right. That is the end of round four. I said those were both rock solid arguments, to be honest. This is extremely tough. You both made amazing points, especially Eric, what you were talking about with Sting and Darby Allin, and you're right. I think AEW probably has more faith in Darby Allin than WWE seems to have in Big E, even though they're building him for that spot too. And Boxman's point about plastering Big E on everything and having him on the morning shows and everything. And Darby Allin's not really that archetype. He doesn't have to be, but he's right about how Big E is the ideal. He could be the face of the company. What do you think?
They've already done with Big E as like part of the New Day, the stuff that they've done. I mean, they've had, he's been on Nickelodeon several times.
Yeah.
As part of the New Day. Now here he is by himself. And now this is a different Big E than the singles run he had as the Intercontinental Champion back in 2013, 2014.
Oh, yeah, different guy.
Different guy, because he really didn't have the charisma back then.
And he's already proven that he can sell merch.
Yeah.
I mean, they fucking sold how many boxes of cereal?
The cereal, the pancake syrup or the pancake mix. I mean, it's just.
But Eric had really good points.
He did have a really good point about, you know, Sting coming in and basically saying, you know, Darby, you don't have to do this. We're going to find out, I said a little bit, because Darby Allin is wrestling Joey Janela this upcoming weekend. And Joey Janela and Darby Allin work that same kind of style. So we're going to see, like, if Sting's influence is coming in yet.
Yeah.
By how Darby wrestles this match against Janela. I think.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I really like both points. And for me to say that I actually think Eric had a good argument hurts.
But he did.
Hey.
He had a really good argument.
Remember what happened?
Huh?
No. Go ahead.
All right. But the thing is that a boxman's point of Big E being the star of the company. Now, I agree with that, and I actually think Big E probably should have won the Rumble.
Yeah.
But they're doing this feel-good story with Edge. Which I don't have a problem with. All right, I have no problem with feel-good stories, especially for somebody that actually had to retire before he hit 40. Okay?
And the only thing about Big E, and I don't think we can really count this because Eric didn't really use it part of his argument, but we've seen a lot of guys like Big E, like the Vince McMahon stereotype with the muscles and that. I mean, he can work really well, but we've seen those guys fizzle out.
Well, yeah, he can work better than the rest of them. I mean, when he started out and he had the whole 5-count deal, that was a ripoff of King Kong Bundy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
However, Big E's a better worker than Bundy.
Yeah.
Where I'm going with this is that, like, the argument, I can get behind Boxman's argument more than I can get behind Eric's argument. Even though Eric had a really good argument.
Yeah.
Okay. But my point would have to go to Boxman because I could see I can't see Boxman being plastered on TVs all over.
Let me tell you something, brother. Oh, okay, go ahead.
I can see Big E being on talk shows. So I could see him doing, you know, the late night talk shows, you know, like the Jimmy Fallon and James Corden and Stephen Colbert.
Yeah.
Darby's
very different.
Darby's very different. He's basically a younger version of Sting if Sting did all the Jackass stunts.
I get kind of a young Jeff Hardy too.
Yeah. Out of him.
But all right. Taking all that into consideration, this was awesome. Both guys have.
I was gonna say my point really doesn't count, right?
Well, it kind of does. Well, because I'm agreeing with you. I'm gonna give the point to Boxman, and he's gonna win this thing. That was rock solid. So, congratulations, Eric. You have nothing to be ashamed of. That was awesome.
You beat me.
You beat Doug, which is all you really wanted anyway. He even said that. You only wanted to do was beat Doug.
Hey, he only really wanted to beat me because he wants you to keep coming back on the show.
I'll come back anytime, man. I got no problem with this.
Yeah.
This was awesome. This was fun. This was awesome.
Yeah. You're the champion out box. One of the, I mean, I guess it's got to hold more importance than the Impact Championship, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
I would put it above the Impact title. Definitely above the Impact title and the MLW Championship.
Okay. So we're beating them. But,
I do have one more point.
What do you got?
I almost chose Keith Lee, who's almost kind of similar to Big E. So
that would have been a good argument too. But
truth, I would have had a hard time because Keith Lee is another guy that I thought about picking too, but
yeah.
he's been out for a few weeks, so I kind of wanted to pick someone that's been in the eyes of of us for
the viewers. Yeah.
What the hell happened to him?
Mia, ended up with COVID.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Oh wow.
So he had quarantine with her. So.
Mia,
I chose Darby because I wanted to be in a different company. So.
No, dude. I'm a big fan of Darby. I just really worry about his safety, and I got a feeling his shelf life may not be only if he holds it back. But I really like Darby. Yeah. I think he's really good.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
I hope he does hold it back because I think he has a future in this company, in this industry.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
Yeah, he's like what, 24, 25?
Yeah.
Yeah, and listen, a lot of guys start holding back a little too late. One of the guys that didn't, AJ, was one of the guys that started holding back, and it probably saved his fucking career. So yeah. AJ Styles. So, you know, a lot of guys start holding back too late, but I just hope someone slaps Darby in the head and goes, dude, you don't have to do this.
I hope that's Sting.
I hope so too. I don't know if Sting's got the balls, but we'll see. Old Steve Borden.
And congratulations, Box.
Thank
I want a rematch someday.
Dude, I'm down. Anytime, man. Anytime.
All right. Well, Box is the current Settle in the Ring champion, so he is obligated to come back.
Yeah, we will be we'll be messaging you, sir. We're gonna set up the next date in the future here. Absolutely.
I'm gonna judge next time. I can't go against him again right away. I mean I need time to train.
I already got two contestants in the cuff. I'll announce them soon, but I already have.
Don't I have to call one of them? Or did you already?
I talked to
them. Oh, okay.
But
because I'm usually the guy that gets the whole
thing.
So get that set up. But until then, you got anything else, Doug? Or do you want to head home?
I think we can head home because what you and I were talking about, we're just going to do off air, right?
Yeah. So, Box, thanks for coming on. This was awesome.
Definitely, I appreciate it, guys. I really do. I had a great time, man. This was really fun. I like doing this.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Well, you're also natural for arguing.
I am a fast talking salesman.
I mean, if there's anything I remember from my time on THT, it was arguing with you.
Yeah, I do have a little bit of argument in my blood. I mean, I'm Jewish, you know, so it comes along with it. I'm either going to guilt trip you or argue with you. One of the two.
Yeah, I mean, you're sexist for a second argument. I mean,
but I mean, at least like we did. At least none of the arguments between him and I had anything to do with Baron Corbin on this episode. Which
that is my guarantee to the fans. We will not bring up that piece on this. Well, we might have to.
It is like worst healers or like worst performer or something like that. Yeah. Or who the guy who looks more who looks most like a shaved testicle.
I just call him a dick with arms. He literally looks like a penis with arms.
I'm proud of you the one day I told you that he blocked me on Twitter.
See, I don't even bother with him on Twitter because I know he's I don't even go on Twitter that much. I'm old and don't know how to use it anyway, so what the hell.
But
Baron Corbin on Twitter is a little bitch. He gives fans like, he's like, oh, look at my rental Ferrari keys. Whatever, dude. I was driving one of those at 23. Fuck you.
All right, well, on that note, fuck Baron Corbin. This is Settled, episode number 2. Boxman, thanks for coming again. And
we'll be in touch.
We'll be in touch, and we'll see you guys next time.
All right. I appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
Bye, Box.
All right, bye.
Bye, guys.